going to begin today on campus, where the UNC Board of Governors is moving this week to eliminate commitments to diversity and inclusion at all 17 UNC system schools. That's a last-minute addition to the agenda, though board members have been discussing the possibility publicly for a while. Today's meeting of the board's Committee on University Governance is set to begin at 3:45 this afternoon. The full board meets tomorrow. That's not the only controversy where UNC folks are weighing in. Also this week, a group of nine black former basketball players at UNC, Duke, and NC State have come together to write an open letter denouncing Republican gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson. The letter says Robinson is, quoting now, unfit to be our next governor because of his meanness towards black, Jewish, Muslim, immigrants, and transgender people. The letter was organized by Deborah Stroman, whom you hear regularly on 97.9 The Hill. Signees include former Tar Heels Al Wood, George Lynch, Darlene Cannon, and Kathy Crawford, and you can read the letter in full on chapelboro.com. Meanwhile, heated debate also continues on campus over the ongoing conflict in Gaza, with pro-Israeli and pro-Palestinian student groups both raising their voices. The organization Students for Justice in Palestine has raised numerous demonstrations at UNC, but they've run afoul of some university officials over masks. Sierra Pfeiffer filed this report for Carolina Connection.
At a March 22nd protest organized by UNC's chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine, members gathered on the steps of the South Building to hold a die-in, a type of protest where participants lie down to represent the lives lost in conflict.
And I want to see that in our lifetimes! Palestine will be free in our lifetimes!
UNC leaders expressed concern about the event, and not because of what the protesters were saying, but because of what many of them were wearing. Medical masks, the same ones a lot of us wore during the pandemic. SJP has advised protesters and protest announcements to wear masks, and a spokesperson for the group said masks are encouraged at protest to ensure the safety of immunocompromised members and allies. But a 1953 North Carolina anti-mask law prohibits masks, hoods, or devices meant to conceal a person's identity from being worn in public spaces. The law was initially enacted to penalize Ku Klux Klan members because Klan rallies often included hooded cloaks. Since then, a stipulation was added in 2020 exempting masks worn to ensure the physical health or safety of the wearer or others. At March's UNC Board of Trustees meeting, Professor Emily Putnam Hornstein from the School of Social Work suggested the SJP protesters are breaking that law.
Let's look at how they themselves have communicated to their members and described their own actions. In preparation for their protest on the 17th, they posted recommended attire as, quote, masks and plain clothes, face coverings, more to come. On October 25th, 2023, they publicly announced that, quote, masking is now required for all events going forward unless otherwise stated.
UNC Provost Christopher Clemens also sent an email to SJP on March 21st, the day before the die-in. It reads, I am writing respectfully to request that you ask the students not to wear masks except for allowable medical reasons or religious head coverings for their protests. This practice, currently encouraged by leadership, runs counter to our campus norms and is a violation of UNC policy and state law. UNC Media Relations would not make Clemens or other university officials available for interviews. But according to Professor Robert Kahn from the University of St. Thomas, when interpreted in court, anti-mask laws faced First Amendment protections.
That strikes me as a fairly clear violation of the intent of the mask laws and overreaching and something that is protected speech under the First Amendment.
Kahn studies anti-mask laws, and he said, the world has changed a lot since many of them were written, and not only because of a global pandemic.
In a society with closed circuit TV and doxing, policy ought to be modified to reflect the growth of facial recognition technology.
SJP cites UNC's extra focus on masking during protests as one of several reasons the organization filed a Title VI complaint against the university this week. That's a formal complaint to the U.S. Department of Education, which outlines claims of discrimination. Another Title VI complaint was filed against UNC earlier from a local attorney alleging anti-Semitism on campus. In Chapel Hill, I'm Sierra Pfeiffer.
For Carolina Connection, a student-produced radio newscast from the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media that airs Saturday mornings at 8:30 on 97.9 The Hill. Over now to Hillsboro, where the Hot Tin Roof Bar on Margaret Lane is closing at the end of April. The owners made that announcement on social media yesterday, thanking the community for their support and inviting everyone to, quote, make the last 2 weeks an absolute party. The bar became a subject of controversy a few years ago when a group affiliated with the right-wing Proud Boys started congregating there. But in general, the Hot Tin Roof has been a popular staple of the Hillsboro music and nightlife scene since it first opened 11 years ago. In Raleigh yesterday, a three-judge panel of the State Court of Appeals issued a mixed decision in a lawsuit over COVID restrictions in 2020. WRAL reporting that the State Bar and Tavern Association filed the suit, claiming COVID-era lockdowns violated the rights of bar owners. In yesterday's ruling, the judges agreed that Governor Roy Cooper likely overstepped when issuing orders that treated bars differently from restaurants, but the judges largely sided with Cooper otherwise, meaning bar owners probably won't get much compensation from the suit. Not yet determined, though, the ruling kicks the case back down to a lower court, and either side could still appeal to the state Supreme Court first. Also in Raleigh, the numbers are in from the first month of online sports betting in North Carolina. State officials report North Carolinians bet a total of $659 million online in March, though about $200 million of that was promotional. From those bets, North Carolinians won about $590 million, leaving $66.5 million in total revenue for the sports betting companies. The companies pay an 18% tax on their revenue, so the state will take in about $12 million just from those first 3 weeks. Closer to home, multiple media outlets are reporting the FBI is launching an investigation of the bomb threat that forced the Durham Main Library to evacuate on Saturday, right before a story hour hosted by the Rainbow Collective for Change. There's been a spike in bomb threats across the U.S. in recent years, often targeting LGBTQ organizations, as right-wing groups have stepped up attacks on LGBTQ people and LGBTQ-themed books in particular. Back in Chapel Hill, good news for downtown drivers. East Rosemary Street is back open for traffic after 8 months. The 100 block had been closed since August for construction on a new parking deck, part of a larger redevelopment on East Rosemary. That new deck will have about 1,100 parking spots when it opens, which is expected to do sometime this summer. Meanwhile, the Chapel Hill Town Council meets tonight at 6 with an agenda that includes a legislative hearing and a possible vote on a proposal for affordable senior housing on Legion Road. You can get a link to the full agenda on our website, chapelboro.com. Finally, we head back to campus where the UNC School of Social Work had a big week last week. First, they got ranked fourth nationally in U.S. News and World Report's annual list of America's top graduate schools. And then they announced the name of their new vice dean, Robert Hawkins, who will take over that position in July. Hawkins spoke last week on 97.9 The Hill about the increasing need for trained social workers today.
I spent 18 years at New York University School of Social Work. And so I lived in New York City, and there were so many times when I saw things happen, and I would think to myself, I wish they had hired a social worker, or I wish a social worker was part of this team. And, you know, fast forward until now, and what we're seeing is that police departments are realizing that. So teachers now have stronger connections to social workers. Universities are recognizing that their students are going through a mental health crisis, so they need stronger and better access to social workers.
That's Robert Hawkins speaking there. You can visit our website, chapelboro.com, to read a transcript of that full conversation. 6:19, your time. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by CIMG Residential Mortgage. The streak is over for Carolina baseball as the 11th-ranked Tar Heels fell to 19th-ranked Coastal Carolina last night 5-4. UNC gave up 4 runs in the second inning, came all the way back to tie it in the 8th, but then the Chanticleer scored 1 more in the 9th to break the tie. That ends Carolina's school record streak of 27 straight home wins dating back to last year. Vance Honeycutt led the way in the losing effort, going 3-for-5 with 2 solo home runs. That makes him the only player ever in ACC history with 50 career home runs and 60 stolen bases. Tar Heels back on the road this weekend, facing NC State in Raleigh starting tomorrow night. Carolina softball is in action later today. They're on the road at Liberty starting at 4. In the pros, the Durham Bulls also took a loss yesterday, 7-4 at Worcester. Game 2 of that road series is this afternoon at 3. And in hockey, the Carolina Hurricanes wrapped up their regular season with a 6-3 loss to Columbus. Canes face the Islanders in the first round of the playoffs. The schedule will be announced later this week. Over now to basketball, where the playing season is over, but the transfer portal season is just beginning. A lot of uncertainty now about who's going to be playing for which team, so when is it all going to take shape? Here's David Glenn of the North Carolina Sports Network breaking it down.
Number one, everybody should remember that the transfer window in the sport of men's basketball has changed this year. It started the day after Selection Sunday of the NCAA tournament, so it's been underway for a few weeks now. It ends May 1st, so the overwhelming majority of transfers will have made their decisions by May 1st. So that's one big threshold. But I would add to that, that for example, you know, Duke senior guard Jeremy Rhodes last year was considering leaving Duke. He did not announce that he was staying with the Blue Devils until the dead middle of May. And remember, the NBA deadlines linger. The last day to tell the NCAA that maybe you tested the NBA draft waters, but you decided to stay, the last day for that is May 29th. So I would say we'll know, and I'm just picking numbers out for perspective, we'll know 80% of these rosters by May 1st. You will know 90 or so percent of these rosters by June 1st. But it's going to take a long time to get from where we are right now to having an intelligent outlook on either the 2025 Tar Heels or any of the other 17 teams in the new-look ACC.
David Glenn speaking there. Visit our website, chapelboro.com, later today for the latest in his column series, Holding Court. And finally, congrats to UNC's Varsity 8 rowing team, just named ACC Crew of the Week after leading Carolina to victory over George Washington and Georgetown at the GW Invitational in D.C.